All right. Hello and welcome to the Pirates Fan Forum here on DK Pittsburgh Sports Podcast Network. I'm your host, Gary Morgan. With me, as always, my good friend, Jim Stamm. How you doing, brother?
Good, Gary. I want to address something right off the top here. Okay, so this is serious. There's going to be no booing of our guests today. Okay, this is the Pirates Fan Forum. That's not what we do here. And we're better than that. So just to get that out of the way right now.
You know, I'm glad you did that, Jim, even though we don't charge good money for tickets to this show. You know, I still think it applies, right? We should sell everybody who the hell the guest is, right? It's Josh Booth from Bridge to Bucktober podcast, and he's joined our team over at Steel City Pirates, too. He's written some stuff now. So that's a little bit of what we're going to talk about. Josh, how you doing?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Good, man.
Good. Good. It's been an emotional roller coaster of a week for a 9-3 baseball team. You would think that people would be a little bit more bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, right? But it seems like people are kind of teetering on the verge of thinking the whole thing is going to collapse, Jim. I haven't seen that kind of evidence yet. Have you?
No, I think what happens is one of our own looks infallible. It's a blow to the psyche, right? David Bednar struggling a little bit. And I think the expectations have been raised, whether people really realize it or not. And last year, I think people were willing more to just enjoy the start. And now, maybe not so much. Maybe there's some real expectations tied behind it.
Yeah, and it's been a different kind of start too. I would say less fluky, a little more engineered looking, you know. That's good to see. There's a lot of exciting things to talk about. And since I told everybody before we started recording here that I got like 3 hours of material, let's get rocking. First thing we're going to talk about is some stats. Because with Josh, you can't just suggest that you're going to talk stats and then not talk stats on the show. I've learned that because I've had him on a couple times. Yeah. And he's got a spreadsheet of crap that he goes and does homework, you know, on said stats. So I have to make sure we talk about it. And first one I wanted to talk about was this new one that I had really never heard of until he wrote this piece called Trendline on our site called OpQual or Opponent Quality. And it was such an interesting way to look at things because I've never seen the opponents rated in spring training and how it applied to players. Can you just explain to everybody kind of how that works a little bit?
Yeah. Baseball Reference. I haven't seen this anywhere else, but Baseball Reference basically puts it up, and I've only seen it around spring training. But it's essentially a 1-10 rating of where a player was the year prior. So it's one opposing batter is a pitcher. So that doesn't exist anymore. And then it basically goes up to three is rookie and short season, full season A, high A. And then seven, a rating of seven is double A, triple A is eight, and 10 is MLB. The thing that makes it interesting to me is it hardly ever gets above eight.
Yeah, just because of, just with it's an average players, right?
Right. Yeah. Uh-huh. It just hardly ever. But it also, I mean, and just like any stat in baseball, none of them are perfect because Paul Skenes is a 1.5, or no, I guess
right
somewhere around a 3. You know what I mean? 4 maybe. I guess. Who knows? Because he was barely there. So like, and he's obviously a different animal than what you'd face. That's a typical double A guy. So. You know, with everything, you have to look at all of it. But I always thought opponent quality was really interesting when it's really low. And I think that's kind of one of the things like, hey, we see guys struggling, but everything else looks good. Well, he's facing some good pitchers and he's got a 8.0 opponent quality, which means he's probably facing some good pitchers who are maybe a little bit ahead of him. Or likewise, and there was a couple in the article there who had a very low op qual who were sitting around a six and not doing well. And those are the guys that you say, all right, maybe a little bit of concern there.
Yeah, I mean, but if you want to look at it as a predictor stat, you know, for basically where a player is right now.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't get more stark than the fact that one of those guys you mentioned was Colin Selby and, and DFA dealt at this point. So, Jim, you read this piece too. Did you have any questions for Josh you wanted to kind of go off a little bit?
I'm just curious, Josh, how'd you stumble across it? Did someone point it out to you, or did you just see it and kind of started diving into it? Because I hadn't seen this until you did it.
Yeah, I think so. I think it was something that I noticed last year, and I don't know if it was I told Gary before we started, I've done a couple like webinars with Baseball Reference before. I don't know if it was even something there or if it was just I not very many days go by that I'm not looking at Baseball Reference at something. It just kind of happens.
That doesn't shock me, but go ahead.
Look at what Douglas Smith just wrote. He gets better data here than with Verizon. You might as well pay for it.
That's awesome. Love it. That's awesome. But yeah, we probably got some receipts. If you listen to our show last spring, we started bringing it up then. Yeah. But it really, I don't know how long they've been doing it. That was I've noticed it.
Here's what I love about it, because spring training, right? It's a very confusing time for fans. Very confusing. Even for us, I think, like sitting there and you're watching things, and it's just another bit of information and a tool you can try to gauge some things a little better. It's not, obviously, like you mentioned, you know, with schemes and whatnot, and so it's not the Bible, but it does give you a little bit of a roadmap to try to help figure it out, maybe.
I think one thing that a lot of people tend to forget, as far as like from a fan viewpoint, I think one thing that people tend to forget is that the coaches and the evaluators and everybody, they're watching these guys all day long, not just during that one broadcast that we see, or even during the box scores that we're looking at. You know what I'm saying? And so, like, they get a much better view of what's going on than any of us do.
Yeah, right. And I'll put a link to this piece in the description of the show here, if anybody wants to check it out. But one more thing that I thought was really cool in it is, it showed the whole Kevin Newman excellent spring training episode from a couple of years ago. It showed why him not moving into the regular season with that same gusto was eminently predictable. You know, like, nobody should have been fooled by that, including the Pirates. So that it was pretty stark, actually. I expected you to kind of point something out like that when you started going down that road, but I didn't think it would be quite that stark.
Yeah. And I'm going to make sure that everybody gets over there. And do you prefer Baseball Reference over Fangraphs? I like them both. I do prefer Baseball Reference. I will say that it's probably because their site is easier to get around. And I've been looking at it a lot longer. But there are some things that you go to Fangraphs for that aren't on Baseball Reference, and vice versa. I have StatHead as well, which is a Baseball Reference offering. And so I can go in and I can kind of nail down all the different splits at different times. And Baseball Reference is a kind of a cool team to talk to, as Gary, you just mentioned. I've emailed them several times about asking them to give me like a code instead of their dropdowns. They won't do it, but so
keep bugging them.
Yeah. I like Baseball Savant too. That's pretty good. Yeah. That's run by MLB. The reason I like the MLB stuff is selfish reason entirely. I'm writing and I'm usually writing about something really timely, and they're the first one to have the numbers populated.
100%.
So I go there all the time before I go anywhere else. And that's why it can sometimes take Fangraphs a day to update, and Reference too, I would say.
Oh, yeah.
You got a good day sometimes. So, like, if you're talking about stats and a guy just pitched tonight, you have to go to MLB or you're not going to get those.
That's right.
Yeah.
But, you know, good start to that conversation. We'll get into a little bit more about what you have planned for next month as we continue talking here. But we should probably take a break because We did eat up that whole first segment talking about it, huh?
At DK Pittsburgh Sports, we take pride in coverage that connects our city's fans to their favorite teams. Now, that connection's stronger than ever. Introducing our all-new state-of-the-art app. Find expert inside reporting and original podcasts. Check live box scores. Track the latest stats. Chat it up with our community of thousands of fans, all in one place. The new app from DK Pittsburgh Sports. Coverage that connects.
All right, welcome back to the Pirates Fan Forum here on DK Pittsburgh Sports Podcast Network. We're going to go into Call Your Shot right away because Call Your Shot, I think, is going to lead us down a path that takes on almost all of the other things that we wanted to discuss. So we should probably just go ahead and knock that right out. All right, and Call Your Shot is brought to you, as always, by the fine people over at ShopYens.com. One brand to rep all the black and gold. This week, I chose OSU Bucks 0214 from X. Please shorten your name, sir. thoughts you both have on Shelton doubling down on Bednar's role, saying we'll see him in the ninth if needed tonight, and he specifically means tonight in Philadelphia. Is that ballsy because he has reason to be confident in Bednar, or is it plain dumb? And then he goes on to say he's not an expert. None of us are, sir. There is no such thing when it comes to this stuff. As far as I wrote a pretty big long piece about David Bednar the other day on my site. It's not that I'm not going to repeat some of that stuff, but I'm certainly not going to say all of it again. I kind of called that this might be a possibility. I thought they might see what he did like in the off day and think that they have taken care of whatever mechanical issue they spotted was. I'm pretty sure that Stephen Brault diagnosed it in the post game himself.
That's so fast.
And if he could do it, you have to guess Oscar Marin was probably like bouncing on the bench already before he even came out of the game to get in the shop and make some of these changes. This could be hyperbole from Derek Shelton, you know, basically like showing public support for my guy. And then if he gets in a 3-2 game, he goes, I'm going to go with Chapman tonight. And then when he gets in the post game, he'll just say, oh, we just like that matchup better. You know, like that could be a save face type thing for David, or they could go right to David. I mean, this is a guy with 2+ years experience showing you he's a closer here, and he's gone through downs before, Jim. I think the coaching staff probably knows pretty well from what he's doing in side sessions what they're going to get.
Yeah, a couple things here. Good question, by the way, from Mr. Twitter long name. I think what the first thing you can take away from this, and, you know, I think we were all trying to put cold water on this, is David Bednar's health is not the problem, okay? Because I just think people are speculating that somehow he's injured and whatnot. It's not that. And quite honestly, there'd be no reason to be running him out there on April 8th and 9th and the 10th if he wasn't, you know, if he was structurally something wrong with him. There just would not, they would not do it. I don't think David Bednar would even do that as much as he is a gamer. So that's first and foremost. Secondly, then that tells you it is something mechanical. It is something that they think that they can get their arms around here relatively quickly. And they are willing to run him back out there and treat it as a minor blip rather than something bigger than it is, even though we as fans start to worry immediately that is he not healthy? Is this the start of his decline? All these other right. things. I honestly think, and now we'll see, this is the beauty of putting these things out there before the games. I do think if they are in a safe situation tonight, I do think they will go to Bednar. I don't think it was just talk. What do you guys think?
I honestly don't know. I think I wouldn't be surprised either way. I personally think 3 out of 4 is enough for me. And coming off an injury, it's enough for me, Josh, to think, hey, let's pull the reins back here. Let's wait for a blowout. Let's maybe put him in like the 7th or 8th, something a little bit lower, you know, stress. That said, you know, if it's a close game, there is no lower stress. And I don't really care about the closer position as a whole myself anyway. So I would prefer they just eliminate it and bounce people around whatever matchups make sense. I know that's not where their head is. That's me. But, and it probably means something to David. So maybe it's inevitable that it's just going to happen again. But is 4 out of 5 enough?
Well, you think
5 out of 6 enough?
I mean, if it's Schwarber and Harper coming up in the 9th, I don't think anybody would mind if it was Chapman, and they might go that route, even if none of this ever happened.
Right.
I overreacted, I'm sure, in one way or another. I had one conversation where I was on one side of the argument with one person, another conversation where I went on the other side of the argument. And so it was kind of the whole thing. We're winning. And with winning, I think that some of this comes along. You get a little impatient, you get a little upset, especially if you're at the game. And so, you know, I think the further I get away from it, the more it's just kind of not a big deal. And I think if Rowdy never says anything, I don't think we blow it up as much either. However, Rowdy didn't say that for you guys. He didn't say that for me. He was literally saying that for David Bednar because of two things. Bednar he's going to wear it. And because Rowdy goes up there and he says what he says, they don't ask the question and Bednar doesn't have to sound like he's making excuses. I think that's why he did it. However, his last outing, blown save, he literally missed one pitch. He left a splitter up in the zone. They hit it for a home run. This outing was terrible.
Yeah.
But this outing was just that wasn't.
This one was just a complete loss of control.
Yeah. It was bad.
Yeah.
No doubt about it.
A couple things there. You know, I think a lot of people talked about like, oh, we were booing Shelton. I find that very difficult to believe. And the reason that I find that very difficult to believe is because it just go back to what actually happened. He walked the first batter. Hit the next one, gave up a single. And then that single turned into an error and that tied the game. And all of this happened in about 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And then Shelton's out there arguing about where the player should be on the base paths. So he's not in the dugout making a call at that point. He's out on the field trying to like get this base runner situation settled, which he won, by the way, got the runner back to second base. Goes back in the dugout, gets on the phone, gets the pitcher back up, Rowanzi, who was up for the third time now. Right. Mm. So he should have been hot pretty quick. So what's David do? Plunk the next guy. And Rowanzi's not ready. You know, so I don't know. Like if you're booing Shelton there, okay, but at least just can you kind of admit it was just you didn't think you should have put David Bednar in?
Like, yeah, I thought it was giving the fans a little too much credit for being man, I'm trying to say this as nicely as possible. Educated about what was going on. I don't know how else to say it. I thought it was visceral. I was there. I mean, so not that that matters, but from my indications, it felt like it was a healthy bit of booze, and I can't imagine everybody's there, you know, all that concerned about Derek Shelton's managerial prowess in the moment. So
right. I just don't think there was time to be thinking like
yeah,
that. I had the benefit of sitting back 2 hours after the game, really thinking about that sequence. I actually rewatched that sequence before I wrote it to make sure it wasn't like different in my head than it actually happened. Yeah, it just happened too quick for there to be any kind of reaction really to it. I don't know. And then he's your closer. You want to give him an opportunity. He's only given up a single here, and he had a curveball slip out of his hand. You certainly don't think the second curveball is going to slip out of his hand too, right? We've seen him do that before.
Here's the really interesting aspect to this that I don't think if this was happening last year with that roster, I don't think you'd be having as much of a reaction right now. And that is because we now have Chapman. And so when I look at it, it's very much like a quarterback situation where if you've got a guy that people deem, like we would know about quarterback situations here in Pittsburgh, but if you've got a guy that you deem to be capable and he's the backup and the starter is not doing well, well, you're going to have people start clamoring for that. And it can happen in a very short span. Yeah. So I do think that there's an element of that, that whether people are either realize or not. I mean, Aroldis Chapman is nasty. But let's not forget about Aroldis Chapman, too. He has not always been great, as good as he is, as like a closer. You know, like sometimes he's better suited, I think, to be in that eighth inning role.
So, my thing with Aroldis Chapman is, and Josh, this is kind of where I go with that. Again, I fall back on what I said about the closing position. I don't like it. I'd rather do matchups. If when you have Holderman, I'm hoping end of the season you have like Holderman, Majinski, Chapman, and Bednar, all, and Barucki even, all like in that mix of like really good back end arms. And who knows what Ryder Ryan's going to turn into. You know, like, that's a crazy pitch too. You know, you can have a lot of options there that you might want to play. Maybe you need that ground ball. Maybe you need that strikeout. The Monday night's game against Detroit to me is exactly why I don't want to just go Chapman as the closer, because Monday night's game is in a lot of trouble if Chapman doesn't come in with the bases loaded and strike out two guys back to back. We don't have anybody else that can do that except for David Bednar when he's right. And if David Bednar isn't right, and that's why you're moving Chapman, guess what you still don't have then in the eighth? And that was a much more crucial inning. So I don't want to do that. Will they, if David fails again, like tonight, if he gets an opportunity? Probably.
But Chapman really is, to me, like your get-out-of-jail-free card, right? Like where if you have something super dicey in the seventh or eighth inning, man, you put him in there and just hope he bails you out because of those two strikeouts per inning pretty much for him. So to me, it's real nice having that sitting there. And I guess like what would be really interesting, and you know, maybe we'll get a chance to ask some of these questions at some point down the road but with people who know, is that like when guys are in the bullpen and you start getting into your routine of when you think about going into games and how you try to prepare for that, because there is a process to that, right? It's a very different from the time you get the call to how much time you have to warm up to so on and so forth, right? So do guys really value that stability of knowing, like, okay, this is typically going to be my inning, this is what I'm going to need to be, or can you really, really shuffle that around? I think that's an interesting question. I'd be really interested to hear from some people that are really in the know about that.
Imagine it's probably a mix of the two, right?
Yeah.
What did you think?
Relievers are creatures of habit, big time. They are.
What did you think of the whole situation, Josh? I mean, the story, not the booing part, but the actual on-field stuff, like, how would you handle this with David Bednar? Do you think you'd just put him back out there? Or do you think 3 out of 4 for you is like an indication that let's pump the brakes here and just get you right, big boy, and then get you back into doing what you do?
Obviously, I look at the numbers. Obviously, I look at command, and his stuff is still his stuff. I think that you have an outlier that this was a bad outing. There's no way around it. And he wore it and he knows it. And he doesn't
It looked like a spring training, first spring training outing is what it looked like.
Sometimes it looks like the third spring training outing. You know what I'm saying? Like are times where halfway through spring training, somebody goes out there and you're like, what was that?
Right.
And then they're like, oh, well, I was getting, you know, I was getting warmed up. Now I'm working on something. Obviously, he's not working on something, but that's what it looked like because he lost his command entirely. But like I said, the outing before that, when he blew a save, he missed one splitter up in the zone and it was just enough. I think it was his last outing. And so, sometimes you run into that sort of thing.
So
it stinks.
So Josh, answer the question. What would you do?
What I would do, I think right now, having to sit on it for a day, I think if they would have played the next day, I would have been like, you know, let's wait and see. But having to sit a day, they probably worked on something. I imagine they watched video. They know what the problem is. You go with your guy. I actually don't have a problem with it. It's so early in the season. We're still 9-3. I don't know. It's what's happening behind the scenes is going to carry so much more weight than what we saw on the field the other day.
I think you're totally right. And I really hope, like, if a situation comes up like we were talking about with Schwarber and Harper, like, back to, I would hope that, I don't care who your closer is, like, you would want to use a lefty there.
Right.
Like, if you only had Borucki, you don't even have Chapman. I'd rather use Borucki or Fleming there.
I will say this. This is a scary team to go up against with a guy that's maybe not right, because they can make you pay real, real fast.
In a lot of ways, too.
Yeah, yeah. So there's some risk to it. I would put him back out there, and then I would react after that, and then say, okay, well, maybe we do need to pull this back just a little bit. But I will say this overall, I think, the booing stuff, whatever. Do I think that stung David Bednar a bit? Yeah, I think it did. I don't know that I expect that to carry over into his performance. But do I think there's a guy that cares more about representing Pittsburgh and doing it the right way and to have that? Yeah, I think that stung him. I really do.
I think it stung him too. And I think I wrote a little bit about this, but I think for Rowdy, that's a guy that he's probably got a pretty damn familiar feeling. You know, it had the fans of Milwaukee eating out of his hand in 2022 when he hit 35 home runs. Everyone loves him. And the next year he's injured a lot, not hitting as well, struggling to do just about everything. And you got people cheering and when you're not in the lineup and jeering when you are, and happy that you've been replaced by a 40-year-old, you know, like it's a, I think he probably felt something there. Like, nah, that's not cool. They don't understand what's going on here, you know? And I think he probably just stepped in. And I also think if you think he doesn't know that fans would be more mad that he said you couldn't boo than you were at David Bednar's performance, you're probably selling Rowdy short on his intelligence.
So the way he said what he said, I thought was very diplomatically said in a nice way, but also stating how he felt, and I think probably how a lot in that clubhouse felt. So I thought how he delivered it was really that was a veteran move right there.
Yeah, I think so too. You guys want to have some fun? Because this was a serious subject.
Okay, let's. I like fun, Gary. Josh,
let's have some fun. I thought we could do a cool segment called Comments That Mean Nothing But Everyone, including us, makes. Okay? So I have a list of them here.
Oh, boy.
And I hope that you guys can think. And if you think of any, drop them in the chat, everybody, and I'll put them up here and we'll talk about them. I think this could be a lot of fun. Because
I bet we could guess a few of them.
Yeah, well, some of these are, you know, I think you'd consider them cliches, but I think they're just comments that, like, you know, we worry about character limits on X or whatever. Well, if you would stop writing this crap every single time you comment on something that everybody knows universally, you wouldn't need to worry about the character limits. I promise. Here's my first one. Okay. Hope you can stay healthy. Of course you do. You hope everybody can stay healthy at all times. Why? Why is this a comment?
Gary, my wife says that about me every morning.
Oh, so. Well, that must be nice. Mine doesn't. But how about he just needs to be consistent?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Hey, at least you are.
Consistency in baseball, I've never heard of that concept. I've always heard that you're supposed to get super high and super low and be just totally results oriented no matter what. That's how I view the game. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
All right, here's another one. And jump in anytime if you got one. He's got to stop making errors. Yeah. I mean, you want to talk about the mic drop of all comments. He's got to stop making errors. Like, yes, you're right. He does. Thank you. How about relying on analytics?
I had somebody say to me, he just has to focus.
He just has to focus. It's that easy.
It's that easy, and he's not, by the way. Clearly, by missing that ball, he's not focusing.
I love it. I love it. I really do. Stop relying on analytics is the last one. I think stop relying on analytics as a general blanket statement for anything that you disagree with that the coach does.
Yeah.
Okay, like I'm talking like pull a pitcher out, play a left-right matchup, sit a star, anything. Stop relying on analytics.
Always, in hindsight, too.
Always. Here, Eric's got one. Mental thing. He's a head case.
Yeah.
Now, sometimes that might be true depending on the player.
It might be true, but it's used basically every time someone has stuff and isn't being successful.
Well, now, let's be fair here. A lot of these, he does need to stop making errors. So these are true.
And some of them. You do have to focus on the ball going in the glove. I will say, maybe there are some truths in here, but I think the statement is that maybe
it's not a mental case.
Right. Seth says outfielders need to talk to each other there.
Oh yeah.
I love that one. Just as one of Josh's favorites because people have been losing their minds about, people taking charge in the outfield, right? And
it's funny, the outfielders need to talk, and that was the Taylor and the Reynolds thing, and they let that one go right in between them, and it's like, you know, new guys playing with each other, yeah, they something got off there a little bit, and you got to get used to it, but yes, they do need to talk, and I don't know that if you said that to a major leaguer that you might get an eye roll or two. But
well, maybe you could say this next one to a major leaguer then. If he doesn't start hitting, he's not going to make it.
My favorite thing is when they say that about Nick Gonzalez in AAA, where he's only hit.
He's only hit, but then I heard today somebody, because I made some mild point the other day. I think I said like Alika Williams is hitting like 286 or something. Not bad for a bench guy. And then I said, Peggy and Gonzalez are killing it. And the guy said, shows your ignorance. Gonzalez is killing it, but only against fastballs. He doesn't hit curveballs at all. And I'm like, okay, somebody's been reading Anthony Murphy and taking his one point about Nick Gonzalez and making it the only point. Once again, he has to start hitting or he won't make it.
And
here's the thing, like, realize the format we're in, which is usually Twitter /X. And maybe we make the mistake sometimes of just assuming something. You don't have to keep repeating things every time.
And you can't write maybe... more in peace about everything you want to write. You're going to find holes, man. Like, that's really all there is. Let's see what Toddy has here. He needs to not ever analyze everything. I hear that an awful lot, too. Especially about Jack Sawinski. That's a big one. That's a big one right there. Jack Sawinski is because they did that early story on him that he did all the charting and everything in the dugout. And now that's the common thing, is that he's over, he's over prepared basically.
Somebody told me the other day he's stupid.
Hey, look, Dayon's here.
Dan, got it. You got any good ones for us, or did he just jump in? He doesn't know what the what the topic is.
Dayon's got to save all those for all the just one cues he doesn't answer.
How about this? How about this one? He's got to show some emotion out there. Guy clearly doesn't care. He doesn't care. That's there's no emotion.
I like that one too. I like that one too. That's a good one too, especially for some of the guys. I think actually it was Starling Marte was a huge victim of that one. A huge victim.
Pedro Alvarez.
I like this one. Would you boo Clemente?
Well, you know, actually, now that you say that, like, Clemente got that, didn't he? He got a little bit of that because he was smooth, because he was slick. He got a little bit of the laziness. You know what I mean? He got called aloof, which was the same thing that Marte got. And, I was actually talking to a buddy of mine who grew up in Philly, and he's a Phillies fan. And he said that's why Trey Turner got it so bad, because he's smooth and he's not like Harper, and everybody thinks he doesn't try hard because he's so smooth that he's not trying. And so, I mean, there's a lot of that too.
That's a good point.
Let's move on to another topic, because I think we've bashed social media enough.
Why, Gary? This is awesome.
You know what though? Like, it is fun, but it's also, people are watching the game. You know what I mean? I don't know. It's fun. Keep saying your things. Because, I mean, it makes us laugh. And also,
it does make me laugh. It makes me laugh every time I see them. So, Pirates Queen, she asked the keys to sustain the bullpen's productivity. And she thinks one of the things that has done that is the offense. And I think the offense obviously makes those situations they come into easier. And she also rightly points out that the bats will temporarily cool off at some point. We hope it's temporary. They do still have Andy Haynes. I still don't trust him. Keys to sustain the bullpen to me are the number of arms they have with options. I think even Carmen Majinski getting sent to AAA after his rehab assignment there is a sign that not only do they have this depth, but they're going to try to manage it wisely. And, you know, because it would have been a lot easier, I think, to move on from somebody that isn't performing well or is out of options, maybe, that you just want to move on from and bring Majinski up. But I think it's wise to play it the way they are, and they're getting good production out of everyone except Bednar right now. So it's kind of hard to even question any move they make at this point. Ryder Ryan's been sent down and he did nothing wrong. Jose Hernandez has been sent down. He did nothing wrong.
Yeah.
So, like,
well, it's
a great problem to have. That's how you keep it sustainable, though. Options.
Yeah, it sounds overly simplistic, and it's way easier said than done in Major League Baseball, which is, if you have depth in your bullpen and you don't have to burn guys out as the season goes on, and you can manage those innings and those outings and those appearances, my goodness, does that pay dividends later in the season? Guys get cooked, and they're running out there at 80% trying to get some things done, and they don't look like they're going to be in a position where that has to happen this year. And sometimes freshness plays a huge part down the stretch. So I think they're really going to be in a position this year to manage that really well. And there's some more guys coming on the way, I think. So, yeah. And let me just say about the Majinski thing real quick before we get on to another topic is, you know, with him, his age, what his deal was with his injury being, I think it was the forearm strain.
Forearm, yeah.
No issue whatsoever with saying, let's make sure everything's totally, totally good. Let's be really careful here. Let him get his feet under him, and then we'll bring him back up. But that's the luxury of what they have right now.
One question that's really weird about that whole thing, though. He didn't need to come off the IL yet. Like, it's funny, he didn't need to come off of his rehab yet. So I'm not really sure why they felt he needed to do that when they did. That's the one thing I can't answer. I can make sense sense of why he'd go to AAA. I can make sense of, you know, using the options and why, you know, potentially one of your better relievers isn't up here because maybe you just don't need him right this second. I get, but I can't make sense of why you would end the rehab early unless it just doesn't matter because he was always going to go to AAA and that's where they wanted him to be. And
it could be that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't really know a little bit of money too. I guess
a little bit of listen. He's not making a little bit of coin in your pocket. Never. Well, it never hurt Bob before.
Isn't that why Ryder Ryan was optioned the other day and Holderman was just brought back up today?
Could be. Yeah. Yeah. We can blame a lot of things on that. I think. Right.
More than could be.
This is listen. This is the collapse of the regional sports network. Is causing Bob to count pennies now.
Well, he's always counted pennies though. We all read that Athletic piece. So champagne problem. I got pit on my mind.
Justin, yeah. Champagne, let's talk.
Love this bullpen, Wilbert Matthews says, and I totally agree. Let's take another quick break and come back. We're gonna rip up some more topics here. This is fun.
At DK Pittsburgh Sports, we take pride in coverage that connects our city's fans to their favorite teams. Now, that connection's stronger than ever. Introducing our all-new state-of-the-art app. Find expert inside reporting and original podcasts. Check live box scores. Track the latest stats. Chat it up with our community of thousands of fans, all in one place. The new app from DK Pittsburgh Sports. Coverage that connects.
All right, welcome back to the Pirates Fan Forum here on DK Pittsburgh Sports Podcast Network. Do make sure you check out the free app. Everything on there is free. It's super cool. Good stuff. Jose is doing a good job on the beat here. He's just started for the Pirates. And give him some love on social media, too. Give him a follow in the live file. Always keep up to date with your Buccos that way. It's super easy. Now, Josh, I promised you we were going to talk stats. We're going to talk more stats. I'm sick to death of errors, my friend. And I don't mean people making them. Yeah, he does got to stop making them. Errors are just, to me, in such a sport that is so dependent on stats, it's so arbitrary how errors are awarded. It depends on whether you're the home team or the away team. It has ruined no-hitters before. It has saved no-hitters before. It has... there's an awful lot to it that I think just isn't consistent with the game. Worse than anything, I think it's a poor indicator of whether someone's a good fielder or not. Sometimes you can actually be harmed by having excellent range 100%. Because you can get to more balls. And so more balls are going to deflect off your glove, or it's going to be perceived that you should get more balls, right?
Or you make a bad throw because you got to it. Even the fact that you got to it.
Right. So you're a stats guy, man. I mean, like, we love listening to you break down stats and dig into them. And we just think you see things differently. It's part of why we appreciate you. What should we be looking at? I like defensive run save. That's what I tend to go to as far as like my overriding, like, this guy's a pretty good defender type thing. But what do you look at? I mean, is that consistent with how you look at it? Is there any value in errors?
If there's very few or a ton that you can start to see that, but you know, you could be 400 pounds and not be able to move right or left and field everything that comes to you. Well, think of what, 2005, Gold Glove race. Was it 2005? Omar Vizquel, 400 years old, playing in San Francisco, beats out Jack Wilson. And it wasn't even close, but he made less errors. His fielding percentage was better. Well, he got to a lot less. And so they've done a lot of things. I think what's hard is it's hard to do any of that without data, without all of the body movements that we have now, where we know how far he ran and how fast he ran to get there and all these things. Ultimate zone rating, defensive run saved, those are two that are pretty good. That they're confusing for me to try to like break them down. I wouldn't know how to break them down. You can't break them down without access to all that data. But essentially what the goal is guys who have better range get penalized for making errors, like you said in the intro. And that's what they try to combat, is the penalization for errors is fine. There's no reward for the range without these types of things. And so range factor and all these different things come into it. And then you get your negatives and your positives when you do these things. I like even looking at whether the errors were fielded or thrown. Sometimes that can tell you, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, there's pieces of that, but outfielders don't make errors. I mean, very few anyway.
Right.
The game, they have really taken off their foot off the gas. When I say they, over the last 10 years, the errors just aren't being charged like they really were before. And especially, I think, in the outfield, you see it, where there are things you're like, wait a second now. Come on. We've been watching this game for a long time. So that, I mean, so you're looking at numbers that are solely based, not solely, but often based on someone's decision of how the play is scored. And right there is completely fallible when you're talking about it, if you're looking at the data.
So. Reasonable effort, right? Like that's kind of, so before the season last year, there was a thing, there was a, whatever you want to call it, a meeting, a powwow, a training session or whatever that MLB did with the official scorers. And they said, we are going to try to nail down consistency with calling errors. And if you watch all the games, you will notice that in last year and this year, there are plays happening that are blatant errors and not being called. And then there are other plays where you're like, how's that not an error?
Right.
And so like there's something, and obviously I'm not a fly on the wall in that room, but boy, I would have loved to be. How are they defining this? Because they're saying, Gary, you mentioned it depends on whether it's the home team or the away team. Supposedly that's gone away now because of this effort for consistency. I don't know how you regulate that other than reviewing all the plays.
They have been changing some of the determinations post game. You know, you'll see somebody gets awarded a hit here or there. Somebody gets an error given to them after the fact. I think once the game's over, fans don't care, you know, and like it doesn't make it any better in here. It doesn't change anything.
Pitchers do.
I'd love to see them take away a no hitter. They won't.
Well, you know, the other thing is the young kid in LA, Nolan Shanuel, he just had this on base streak of 38 games, right? But in the 34th game, there was a play that they went back and reversed it to an error. And then he lost his on-base streak. So it was like a phantom on-base streak for a few days. But the funny thing is that run didn't score. So it didn't matter. And also, you watch the play and you're like, how are they ruling that in there? I thought it could have been a hit.
It's crazy. They're doing this with wild pitches and pass balls too, right? Like if you start looking at how catchers are now being evaluated compared to even 10 years ago, it's wildly different. So like you're almost getting into comparing different eras sometimes. And I think too, like, you know, when I'm watching games and I'm looking at things, look, I think errors, they're going to happen, right? I mean, they do. They happen to everybody. It's very much in the context of what has happened. And then let's start paying attention to the mental errors sometimes that aren't part of maybe the score sheet and the box score, and just seeing if guys are making the right decisions and making, you know, whatever it is, hitting the cutoff, throwing to the right base, doing all those little things, like those matter just as much, sometimes way more.
I think you make a great point, Jim. Like that's stuff that I think us watching this team, as much as we do, as much as our poor wives deal with, we watch a lot of baseball. So we watch that stuff. And I think it's fair for us to have that expectation of ourselves that we'll notice that stuff. Hey, he didn't cover second base. That's why that's an error on Henry Davis, because he threw where he should have been and he wasn't there to receive it. Or that was supposed to be O'Neill Cruz covering the bag and he didn't. And, you know, that's why it looked like Henry threw it 10 feet wide, right?
Or he throws it home and he should have hit the cutoff and they'll let the guys advance, you know, I mean.
But in reality, when you start going to like the free agent board or whatever, you know, people aren't watching every minute of every game for everybody. And it's not all there that anybody's going to sit there and go through on tape. So you are going to have to rely on some kind of numbers. And that's why I guess I kind of want to have this conversation a little bit, just as a casual fan. Like if we're talking about like, hey, I sure would like to get a better second baseman because down the stretch here, we need a veteran in there. You know, these kids are great, but we need, it's time to just go to the playoffs with something a little bit more muscly. But we know he's a good defender. Well, he's got 10 errors. Well, that might mean he's not that bad. Let's really look into those underlying numbers. It sounds to me like it's kind of an imperfect science still, Josh. There just isn't anything that really replaces that. We're going to have to rely on it a little bit still.
Hey, as a baseball fan, and I've said this before, and I think I even wrote in the article, is I'm still 100% believe in the eye test and watching the game and all of those things. And a lot of the data for me is I like to look it up, and I wrote my line in there was, it's either going to back me up or it's going to shut me up, because I see what I see, and then I'm going to look at the data to see if it agrees with that. But some of this, and this is interesting, UZR, when they actually do this, they base this, I love the plus stats where they say 100 is league average, and you can just look at it, because what's good with that, it's a lot easier to look at, because what you're saying is, well, that guy, like, you know, we were talking about Triolo with somebody the other day, and they said he'll be a 280 hitter. And I'm like, dude, 280 hitters, like, really good right now. It's not what it was. You know what I mean? Like 260, you can still be a productive hitter in this league because they're looking at something different. And so, you know, I like those kind of things. And UZR and DRS are no different. And they use, I think it's UZR uses the last three seasons as their baseline.
Yeah.
It's like you have to have a big sample in order to really get an idea of what's going on there, because it's based off of zero is league average, which is hard for a lot of people to read. He's got zero defensive runs saved. And it's like, well, no, he's league average.
I will say though, this theory that you're talking about right now, which I agree and I understand how they're made up as well, but that's a lot of the reason why there's so many veterans not getting signed, because their drop-offs look a lot more dramatic than they are, because they're based on stats from a conglomeration of 3, 4, 5 seasons, depending on which stat you're looking at. Yeah. And then when they have that first season of real decline, it looks like they've fallen off a cliff, but in reality, they just stumbled a little, you know, like they just slowed down a bit. They don't have the range they used to have. So I think that's another thing that as time goes on, because I think a lot of people think like, oh yeah, we've totally bought in on OPS, or why does it take so long for these stats to take on? Well, it takes a long time for them to start meaning anything. Right. You know, you have to collect data for a while before it can mean anything. And in baseball, it takes even longer than that to start to trust it.
Right.
So it's such a cool conversation to have. And Josh, that's another beautiful reason we wanted to have you on here today.
And let me just add this too. Like, I would think that this is even interesting when we look at someone like Rowdy Tellez, right? As he plays first base, and how people view that, and like what are the positives and negatives? Well, you know, Rowdy's probably not going to get to a whole lot. If you hit it to Rowdy, I think he'll make the play. So it's very, you know, and I'll be the first to say, I think he's looked a little better than I thought he would, but you know, he looks healthy and he's got a little bit of weight off, and that those things help in that regard. But these are the things to keep in mind, even when you're looking at positions like that, and when you go and look at the numbers, as opposed to maybe Carlos Santana and how he played the position.
And he's got a big difference. He's got a baked in person that's gonna make him look bad. You know, O'Neill Cruz is going to make a first.
Oh, I thought you meant Ke'Bryan Hayes. I didn't know you meant Cruz.
Ke'Bryan could hit you in the chest between his legs if he had to. Like, that dude's just got an uncanny ability to hit you right in the target. But I mean, O'Neill Cruz struggles with that, and like I don't I don't think it's entirely about velocity and whatnot with him, but sometimes I think he gets rushed. Sometimes I think he's a guy that can't afford that tick off with his arm and his lower half. I think he has to be mechanically right to have the ball go where he wants. And I think he naturally throws a little bit of a two-seamer. I think like that's his thought is to put those two fingers on the ball and it just comes across like a natural two-seamer and it fades. So I don't know if that's something you can teach a guy, like, hey, quit doing that. Plus his hands are massive.
Yeah. You know, I think that's a big part of it is the ball is going to come out very differently when you have a big long fingers like that too. So
he's a guy that I worry about moving to the outfield, though. Everybody wants to do that, but he's never not thrown sidearm, and you can't do that in the outfield.
And
do you know he goes two in the pinky, but his index finger still comes out like at the index finger place? Yeah. Are you like he goes two fingers in the pinky hole, and then his fingers are still so spread out that he's still his finger doesn't come out the middle finger hole. It's still they're massive hands, and he uses a huge glove too.
Right. You know, it just struck me, and it was such a big play in the game. We get very caught up talking about the Pirates. But, Josh, Gary, that play from Gunnar Henderson the other day is exactly, I think, what we're talking about, where he made the play, got the out, threw the ball away at first. It was an exceptional play.
Yeah.
But that was, you know, an error. And So, man, if you're not watching and you're not paying attention, and we won't know what Gunnar Henderson's doing this year, other than probably what he's doing at the plate, right? And even that is so. It's just those are the types of examples where, man, a guy can make a heck of a play, and he did, but it can look quite differently when you read the game story or look at the box score.
All right, so one more. April baseball, right? When it comes to defense, April baseball, the game speeds up on you, and it's not fast in spring training. You can get your fundamentals, but when the game speeds up, guys just make more mistakes in April, and we have to remind ourselves of that every single year.
It's early, it's colder, there's been some rain. Those things all matter. They do.
Right. I mean, and so does. So does O'Neal's shoe size, as Seth points out.
Yeah.
So, like, one more topic, guys, before we get going today. And
does
it's
he
pretty
throw
simple.
With his feet?
No, kind but of. They're so small. He stumbled. He's got his top heavy.
You didn't hear all that on the broadcast, Jim?
I was probably muted or listening to music, watching.
Jack
the game,
Wilson made a big deal about his feet being small, and that's why he could be a good shortstop and be nimble and everything.
Yeah.
And then Greg Brown talked about it for about six games. Yeah. After it. And anyways, here's the last subject is, this comes from Jack. What do you expect from the road trip to Philly and New York? Okay. So we got Philly and the Mets. Philly can hit. I think that's going to be a real test for this pitching staff in general. I think that's where I probably have to start worrying is that. And I wonder if this isn't kind of the kryptonite for Andy Haynes' offense too, because this starting pitching staff for Philly, they're not nibblers. They throw strikes, and that's what they're really good at. And if you can't get them out of the game successfully, you're probably in trouble. If you get them out of the game, you're probably in great shape.
Yeah.
So it really comes down to, does Andy Haynes' system work or not against the Phils? Because if it does and they get into that bullpen, good night. They could sweep this series, and I'm not kidding.
This is a really interesting topic that deserves more than this. And so we'll have to get back to it, I think, at some point later on down the season, which is, does this approach work against better pitching staffs? Can you get away with this when it really matters and you're facing guys that aren't going to walk people, that aren't going to nibble as much, better, more elite type guys? Can you still execute that game plan I think there's some concern there. I think when the competition is better and pitching staffs are better, I'm not sure.
I want to make sure I hit James here because it's his first chat. So I want to make sure that I put up this question.
Welcome, Mr. Meadows.
Welcome, James. He's hoping Falter gets discussed. He believes the overwhelming majority of his pitches last game were two-seam fastballs. Not sure that approach works next time. I think that's kind of overall the statement to key in on with Bailey Falter is I don't know what will work next time. He's very two-seam heavy. He throws a lot of those. So, and he throws a lot of cutters too. But I didn't see anything different in his mix. I just saw execution. When Bailey Falter executes, believe it or not, I know earmuffs for some of you that can't tolerate it. He's a good pitcher. When Bailey Falter is not hitting his spots, he's an awful pitcher.
You can say this about so many guys, right? That if they are on, they are locating, and they are executing their game plan, they're going to have a good start. The problem is the guys that can't replicate that enough from start to start to start. And Bailey Falter, look, did a great job. It's replicating it and not having these starts where he just, I mean, it looks like he does not belong near a starting rotation. So that's the big thing is you've got to be able to see it long-term. Consistency. Right? Wasn't that the comment earlier?
Yeah, gotta be consistent.
Gotta be consistent, Bailey. That's all we're saying.
Well, he does, but I mean, like, I guess the thing is he a DFA candidate? Yeah, he has no options. I could see them wanting to move him into the bullpen if only because it keeps a little bit more of that pitching depth, you know, and if you need a lefty, you need a lefty, and hey, why not? You've got options on Hernandez. You might be able to pull it and use him for an extra month even. You have no idea how granular people get thinking about the innings they have to go through. That number is daunting when they look at it because nobody has the number that they're going to meet on their roster. Nobody. Right. Nobody in the whole league has the number that needs met on their roster. It's always a dance. It's always a struggle. And guys like Bailey Falter make rosters because of what they can do, not because of what they always do. Right, I think that's probably the best way to look at it. It's frustrating if you see 3-4 bad starts in a row. They have options. They could exercise it at any given time. Bailey Falter's a guy that will get picked up, though. Somebody will deal for him. If only because of what he just did in that start last time.
Everybody thinks that they can pull that out of him more regularly.
Trevor Williams is still pitching, FYI.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and look what he did against the Pirates that day. So getting back to that original comment, which was the Phillies and New York, Mets. Right? Yeah, the Mets. I do think this four-game series versus the Phillies is big. I think it's a team that might not be playing as well as they can. This would be a nice series to show that, you know, that you're somebody that's going to even give teams that are good with good expectations, tough series. I do not want to see them get rolled here. The Mets are a bit of a mess. But you know, This is a nice test for them, I think, this next week.
Yeah, I would have to agree with that. Josh, what do you think? Bills, good test. Probably a little bit of a more mature test than Baltimore.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, I think in many ways it was youth versus youth in that Baltimore-Pittsburgh series. And if anything, the Pirates had a few more veterans, I would say, and it almost like the maturity almost took them past them, you know.
And that series could have flipped real easy. I mean, it was a player too. Yeah. Sure.
Phillies are a good baseball team. I'd much rather play them early in the season. They just don't gel until after the All-Star break, it seems.
Yeah, they get going. Yeah, I mean, I think that they'll see Wheeler on Sunday. They'll miss Nola. And I don't know. It's going to be interesting. The number of pitches that this team has seen in comparison to other teams. I mean, like, we talk about patience, but it is unreal.
Yeah.
And I think that's the only reason why. I mean, I still haven't seen the Pirates play a complete game. I feel like all their damage is done with two outs. And the only reason is because they're wearing these guys down. They just need to get out of the inning, and the Pirates hitters are just not going away. And it is that approach that does that. You'd like to see them hit more often early, because these guys are going to throw strikes, and that's the way it's going
to
go.
I think that's kind of, to me, the overriding thing with this Philly series. I think what we're going to find out in this series, a couple things. Can Andy Haynes' system work against good pitchers? I don't think so far it has. I think Lizardo put a stop to it. And if he had more innings in his bank, I think that game probably goes the other direction. I think Gonzalez shut them down really well, and he's a good pitcher. Or is it Gonzalez?
Rodriguez.
Grayson Rodriguez shut them down pretty easily. And, I mean, those are the two that I really feel kind of held them back. Mackenzie Gore, once he got moving, you know, had filthy stuff, and like they had a hard time against him. But he has wildness. And when you have wildness against this team, you're done. Yeah. Like, if you can throw strikes, the Pirates are beatable. I think there's a lot of, we're going to find out if Andy Haynes has a plan B.
Yeah. Because we all know the numbers, you know, you start getting down and behind in counts. That's when you have a long day at the plate. And you can't force guys to get their pitch counts high, and you're in protect mode and whatever. So I think we all, after having this conversation, are really going to keep an eye on this pitch count thing, right? And how much they're making guys work as the season goes on, and what that looks like, because you could probably win some games, and that's what they're trying to do day in and day out. But could you win? Could you win big series with teams with big staffs? I don't know.
I think so, but I also think that your lineup should have a collection of different types of hitters. I that's what I think. I mean, Jared Triolo goes out there and swings at the first pitch of the game, and I'm like, what are you doing? I don't care if it's – what are you doing? Why don't we look at this guy for a minute? So I actually like that. I think as the game goes on, I mean, I'd love it if they throw strikes to O'Neill Cruz, because he's barely seen any of those.
I'd love that as well. That'd be great. I have an Oliver Stone conspiracy theory that I'm kind of starting to hatch about this team, and it's based on their starts last year and this year. I think Andy Haynes' system works really well when the pitchers aren't stretched out in April. And I think the Pirates take full advantage of getting out of those starters quick. I'm talking fourth, fifth inning. And then the offense just beats up on a bullpen. I think that's what we've seen the last 2 years. And when this month is over, I'm really going to sit down and kind of compare and contrast that sort of thing. Basically how long starters were left in versus them all along that path. And I just want to see if there's any carryover. That doesn't mean I don't think the team's better constructed this year. It just means I think that might be a reason why they're starting so hot.
Yeah, I think month to month in general is going to be very interesting. And that's the thing, too. And Josh, you brought up this good point, and I know we're running long, but this stuff's so interesting to me. Did you talk about maybe having different guys in the lineup that can do different things, right? It's some guys are not comfortable going into counts super deep or getting down in the count, hitting with two strikes. Some guys, it doesn't bother as much. And I think that is the trick with trying to like pace that across the lineup. You know, I've talked to Neil Walker, and he said it never bothered him to hit with two strikes. Mm-hmm. Well, I can tell you there's some guys, they do not want to get in that position, especially down 0-1, 1-2 in the count, things like that. They want to attack. So, Yeah. We'll see if it's replicable all year.
Well, I haven't looked at this lately, but one guy that I have a little bit of pause here with is a guy who I think would benefit, who has benefited from this style is Jack Swinski. He's got a great eye. He should be hunting his pitch. And when he swings first pitch, the numbers aren't good. But you know what is? What is it? 12%, 17% strikeout rate? Jack Swinski's going out there saying, I'm not going to strike out. Instead, I'm just not going to hit that well. Like, hey, get some of the strikeouts back because I want you hunting your pitch, not the first pitch. So some guys actually benefit from this. Swinski's not going to hit. I said he was going to hit 30 home runs. I've got something on this. You need to start you need to start hitting some home runs. And the way you do that is don't swing at that first pitch curveball. Yeah, that's not a pitch Jack, you want to swing at.
Jack's a really interesting case because I've never seen a guy get more 2-2, 3-2 counts. But
Jack's a mutant.
Not as much this year, though. He swung early so much trying to limit strikeouts. And as a result, he's not doing damage like we've seen.
Jack's a statistical mutant, though. Like
he always
has weird splits. He's always got something weird going on with home and away. He's got weird crap with day and night. He's just got weird crap against certain kinds of lefties with certain kind of stuff. And
he's a full season guy, right? He's that guy that they say he needs to be consistent.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'm like, you know what? Let him carry me for 3-4 games.
I'm doing one more here because Randy, he won't stop. This is twice now. He's disappointed Martin Perez didn't have a chance to get the complete game because he hit his 100-pitch limit. This one was more acceptable to me than the book report he wrote earlier. Listen, I get it. I do. I'm old, too. I'm 47 years old. You never would have pulled John Smiley out of a game like that. You never would have pulled Doug Drabeck out of a game like that. I get it. I totally get it. But the game has changed. It just has. Martin Perez was a reliever last year. And this is the third game of a season that you hope to get 160 innings out of him, 170 even. You are not going to do that to him in the third game of the season. Sorry. And Martin Perez, after the game, of course he's going to say he can come back out. Of course he is.
He should. He better.
So, mm-hmm. Right. I mean, he wants his coach to know that he would. But yeah. Derek Shelton unequivocally just today said there wasn't even a thought of putting him back out there. And I think you would find that to be true even if he had a no-hitter.
And that's the thing, Gary, is like people are – that. Well,
yeah.
On this team, I bet.
He threw that out there, made me think a little
team,
bit.
On this team, I bet.
Wow.
And the reason I say that is because if you say it's unacceptable, then it's unacceptable.
You just broke my brain.
Yeah, and so while you're thinking there, I will also say that this doubles down what we started this whole thing with, and that is I could put him out there after 100 pitches, but I really trust my two-time All-Star closer who's elite. And, of course, it didn't work out. We can all look hindsight as 2020. But when you have that much faith in your guy, a David Bednar at 75% is going to be better than Martin Perez after 100 pitches. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like,
well, let's be perfectly clear here. You send Martin Perez back out there and it falls apart on him. What is the response? What are you doing sending the guy back out there, letting him throw 117 pitches, and it falls apart on him when you've got Chapman and Bednar sitting there, unless Chapman came in that game already. But you get what I'm saying.
He didn't. What would happen is they put him in the game, he gives up one base hit, then they pull him out, and then you bring in your closer with a dirty inning, which you don't like to do.
Right. So,
and it's why they don't do it.
Yeah.
You know?
And I'll just say this, Gary, the excellent point is do a lot of people realize what kind of pitcher Perez was last year and that he wasn't a starter and that they transitioned him to the bullpen and so on and so forth? Early season, it's April. He's 33 years old. He's this is him going back to being a full-time starter. I think it's a silly conversation to have, but I get it.
Josh knows this is true because we were chatting during this game. I didn't think he was going to come back out for the eight.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You know, I guess like for me, I had written off the ninth way back in the seventh, you know what I mean?
And I was fired up to see it because obviously, you know, we like that. We like to see starters go deep. I think that this is, like I said, hindsight's 2020. Having this conversation, I think is fine. There are some conversations that I'm like, what are we even talking about? And I think this is a good, like, this is fine. A lot of people would have liked to see him go out there. And you wonder if it was July, if he would have. I don't think so because of the way they do things. But, you know, I that's just kind of where I'm at with it. I think it's this is a fun conversation to have. It's not a ridiculous one. Yeah. He could have probably gone out there and thrown the ninth.
And I'd also say, like I was talking about with the Bednar inning, go back in time. That seventh inning, the eighth inning, he threw like four pitches and got through it. They never expected him to get to the ninth and have that even be a situation.
Right.
So, I mean, that is what it is. Anyways, great show, Josh. Wonderful having you. Look for Trendline on Steel City Pirates. It's really going to be a fun thing that Josh is going to keep doing here for us. And I'm not even going to have him spoiler alert. He can do that on his show for you if he wants to. Listen to Bridge to Bucktober. Jim, do you got any parting shots today?
No, man. Josh, always great when you come on. And that's why we went long. And great stuff, guys.
No, we love it. He just thinks different. Josh, any parting shots from you?
Yeah, we could do this for a couple hours, couldn't we?
Pretty easy.
We really could.
Pretty easy. Pretty easy.
But we got bucks and pucks going on. So let's get this done and over with.
All right, let's go Bucks, let's go Pens, and...
Let's go Bucks!
Yeah, buddy!
All right, see you, everybody.